I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about electronic medical records. We will discuss the ways technology has made it possible for healthcare professionals to find and share information quickly, and how those professionals balance issues of access of information and patient confidentiality. We will talk about all of this with a great panel of guests. Dr. Bill Tierney of the Regenstrief Institute, Dr. Lisa Harris of Wishard Health Services, and Dr. Alan Snell of St. Vincent Health. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about electronic medical records on No Limits, and we're fortunate to have as our guests Dr. William Tierney, who is the president of the Regenstrief Institute. Dr. Tierney, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here. Dr. Lisa Harris, who is the CEO and medical director of Wishard Health Services. Dr. Harris, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, John. Looking forward to the discussion.
It's good to have you here. And Dr. Alan Snell, who is the head of medical informatics at St. Vincent Health.
Good afternoon, John.
It's good to have you here.
Pleasure.
Well, we probably ought to start really by talking about how electronic medical records have transformed how we deliver healthcare services. And I think I'll start with Dr. Tierney on that one, Dr. William Tierney.
Well, I'm old enough in this business, John, to have started when there weren't any electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. When we dealt with paper charts, and if I wanted to know what happened to my patient, I had to call down to the lab or walk down and look for a paper lab slip, et cetera. And I realized then, and I realize even more now, that medicine is an information business, that we spend mm-hmm. most of our time gathering information, recording information, finding information, processing information, and then delivering information to patients, to other providers, et cetera. And the efficiency, the effectiveness of healthcare depends directly upon the accuracy, the availability of health information. And these days, electronically, I can receive information from care sites way outside of my own practice, my own hospital, that in past years just weren't available, which left me guessing about my patient's past medical history, about what they're being treated with, et cetera. So it's made my care much more focused. And as a result, length of stay, I'm the chief of medicine at Wishard Hospital mm-hmm. as well. Length of stay on my service over the last decade has dropped from 7 days on average to under 3.5 days. And it's mostly because we're doing a lot more real quickly because we've got information in our hands to begin with.
So that's about a 50% reduction, then.
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Harris, how would you say it's transformed? Electronic medical records have transformed the practice of medicine.
Well, I would add also that there's just been such an explosion of information that's available, you know, within all disciplines of medicine. And at the same time that the time that physicians have to spend with patients, there's pressures on that time. And I think that the other way that electronic medical records and the capacity of electronic medical records then to provide automatic reminders to physicians makes the time that physicians have with their patients much more valuable. As an example, we know, you know, physicians know all that they need to do to provide preventive care. You mm-hmm. know, they know the recommendations mm-hmm. for screening mammograms, for pap smears, for influenza vaccines. So they have all that. And yet, at the same time, before them may be a patient who has diabetes and heart failure and chronic lung disease who is not doing well, mm-hmm. who is struggling. And the physician appropriately needs to focus the time with that patient on working with the patient to identify what has happened that has, you know, tipped the balance, and, you know, mm-hmm. the patient who was previously stable is no longer stable. They're focusing on that. They're focusing on, you know, getting information from the patient's family. And in that crunch to appropriately focus on the acute situation, that acute need, they very easily can lose sight of the fact that this person before them is overdue for her mammogram or hasn't received her pneumonia vaccine. And that's where what I see as one of the main utilities of the electronic medical record comes into play, where there's this secretarial reminder, there's this machine running in the background, culling all the patient's information, knowing that that patient is overdue for this particular test, and reminding the physician at that point of making decisions for the patient. So all that happens, that facilitates the time. It also helps reduce, we know that a lot of care that we deliver is unnecessary. And some of that is because of, as Bill says, not having the information at our disposal when we need it. And so we may order tests that have been done within the last week or so. Mm-hmm. So another power is for that, again, that sort of that secretarial function to remind. So a physician orders a test and comes back a reminder saying, you ordered this test, or the last result for this patient was 2 weeks ago, and the result was X, and it cost this much. Do you still want to order that test? And in most circumstances, the physician would realize it is no longer necessary. And within our system, across the board, we've seen that we improved the physician's compliance with preventive care that we talked about first by twice. We doubled the likelihood of physicians doing all the preventive care that's necessary, and we reduced the cost of redundant test ordering by 13%.
Dr. Alan Snell, how have you seen the development of electronic medical records transform?
Well, it has been transformative. As Dr. Tierney said, this has been going on now for several decades, slower than we want. I'm sure the three of us would like to see it accelerate when you compare to
Why would you like to see it accelerate?
Well, you compare to other industries that have capitalized on the introduction and then the expansion of computerization, and the healthcare industry has been slow compared to banking and commerce and other places. So I think that's always been an issue. It never happens as fast in healthcare sometimes as you would like, and it's been slow for some providers to give up their normal way or the way they've been doing things for a while. But that's all changing now fairly rapidly. So in addition to the speed of information, the sharing information, like Dr. Tierney said, Dr. Harris said, the clinical decision support, preventive reminders. The other thing that's very exciting that we could not do really very well in paper record systems that we can do now, and that's the analytics. Mm-hmm. So now we can pull data because everything is in a digital format, most everything. So we can design programs, analytic-type programs, to aggregate data, and we can begin to finally look at what's happening to, say, a population of patients, across populations of patients. And it was very difficult to do that in the past. We had financial data, perhaps, but we could do some. But it was very difficult to do it from a clinical perspective because it required chart review, individual chart reviews or tick sheets or other ways collected it. Now it's very simple to do it with the analytic programs that we have.
So has it reduced the cost then of medical research as well, or is that – or just expanded the – your ability to assemble and
well, Bill can best answer that.
Well,
it's
Bill Tierney.
I don't know that it's reduced the cost of research. What it's done is given us the ability to do research that we couldn't do before. Mm-hmm. For the first,
In what areas?
Well,
for
the first 2,000 years of healthcare, we learned from our experience, and our experience is biased. I see what I see, and patients have certain outcomes based on what I do. But if it's just me and a small number of patients, random variation doesn't allow me to make many conclusions. If I can now look at the experience of 1,000 physicians and 1,000,000 patients, then I'm looking more at what's truly happens in healthcare, and I can benefit. I can look and at least generate hypotheses that then can be tested. So we'll do certain things like for example, looking for unexpected adverse drug events. You will remember the drug Vioxx was taken off the market because of cardiovascular complications. Well, a group I'm aware of went back into their own claims records. It's affiliated with one of the large local insurance companies, and saw that there's actually a signal there for that event back 5 years earlier. That if they had been looking for it, they would have found it, but they hadn't been looking for it because that was not their mission at the time. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't there be? It's actually a new field called pharmacovigilance. Why mm-hmm. shouldn't people be out there looking at records from everyday care, rather than small number of patients in clinical trials before a drug is marketed? Why not be looking at people using these drugs after they're marketed, and looking for these signals before they become, you know, early on, before the millions of patients are exposed to these drugs? And the FDA now has a group called the Sentinel Initiative, or an initiative called the Sentinel Initiative, which does exactly that. Does mm-hmm. pharmacovigilance, trying to build a consortium of healthcare systems that provide electronic records that they can look for these signals early on. So that's one example of something that's developing out of mm-hmm. the increasing availability of electronic records. We couldn't have done it 10 years ago because there are hot spots like mm-hmm. Indiana has been a hot spot for electronic medical records for 40 years, but numbers are still pretty small when it get down to individual drugs and individual patients.
We are talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Dr. Lisa Harris, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's fine. I was just going to add that vigilance also serves a function not only in terms of epidemiologic research or maybe looking retrospectively at impact of at adverse outcomes, but can also help us be at the very forefront of managing a disease outbreak. So mm-hmm. with broad applicability, we can see a signal where, you know, one small community in Indiana might be generating more electronic prescriptions for a certain antibiotic and mm-hmm. realize, in much more real time than was ever possible before, that there may be something, an infectious disease outbreak that we can, the tide of which we can stem mm-hmm. by having that advance information. You know, back to Alan's point about the mm-hmm. the efficiency, too. I think that I think electronic medical records have helped reduce the cost of research in that we don't have to do chart reviews, as Alan said. But it also cuts the administrative cost of healthcare. So mm-hmm. we are, you know, healthcare organizations are being asked to provide more and more, appropriately so, more and more information about the outcomes of care. And, mm-hmm. and we're expected to demonstrate the performance and the outcomes we're achieving for the resources that are expended. And it's much less expensive for us to be able to cull our medical records than to have to hire individuals to laboriously do chart reviews. So it reduces the amount of money, the healthcare dollar that's spent on administration relative to the resources that we can put directly toward patient care.
Well, and what I'm hearing here, it sounds like there are several big areas in where it's transferred. It's made healthcare delivery, you're saying, much more cost effective. It sounds like there are also it's improved the ways that healthcare can be delivered to certain kinds of patients anyway, and it's allowed for quicker and more comprehensive study of medical challenges. Is that a fair assessment so far?
Mm-hmm.
So the argument, the question, I guess, would be, why hasn't the medical profession or the healthcare industry moved as quickly, Dr. Snell, as, say, the financial industry in terms of disseminating this information? I suspect we're just going to get started on this one, and then we'll have to pick it up again, but go ahead.
Well, medicine is generally practice and encounters. So there's an encounter of a patient and a mm-hmm. physician, or a patient is hospitalized, and it's encounter-based.
Mm-hmm.
And so records have been mainly centered and designed around those encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've moved to an electronic medical record, but some doctors say, well, I just as soon just scribble down a few notes and I know what's going on. That's all I need. And that's all I need to do to really take care of this patient longitudinally. But now we're being able to show that there are so many things that happen, errors, et cetera, mm-hmm. that we can help prevent if we use the electronic medical record capability to assist the physician in the care of those patients in those encounters. And then moving on to that, how can we now look at the population of patients mm-hmm. that you're caring for? How are you doing overall in diabetes care for all the diabetic patients, mm-hmm. not just a specific encounter?
We are talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits with guest Dr. William Tierney, who is the president of Regan Streiff Institute, Dr. Lisa Harris, who is the CEO and medical director of Wishard Health Services, and Dr. Alan Snell, who is the head of medical informatics at St. Vincent Health. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about electronic medical records. We're fortunate to have as our guests Dr. William Tierney, who is the president of the Regan Streiff Institute, Dr. Lisa Harris, who is the CEO and medical director of Wishard Health Services, and Dr. Alan Snell, who is the head of medical informatics, St. Vincent Health. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've gotten a question, email question from a listener who says, I think electronic medical records are risky. My records can be found online and sold. And then he points us to a video that ABC apparently aired a week ago. Basically, that is one of the areas that we need to talk about, because that's one of, I think, the patient fears or concerns, mm-hmm. is about confidentiality. You know, I don't want my information out there in a cloud where anybody can access it. Dr. William Tierney, would you like to take the first stab at that one?
Well, I think confidentiality, it was an issue that existed before electronic records. It's going to exist. It's going to be with us. I mean, you also have heard exposés of records being found in dumpsters as well. Mm-hmm. And the ABC video that the caller is referring to did show some examples of people who illegally obtained records. And one of the examples was they paid an employee to be able to get into a hospital system and download records, et cetera. I mean, these are illegal activities, the same way that people illegally were stealing records from someplace else. Does it make it easier to steal electronic records rather than paper records? It probably is easier to steal them. It's also easier to track that they've been stolen. Mm-hmm. Somebody photocopies a record. I can't tell what happened to that, but there are traces for electronic accesses that we can trace. So we know it's pretty easy to tell when by the routine monitoring that happens within systems that who's looking at a record and what's happened. And even within the hospital system that I work in, we've prosecuted people who've looked at records that they had no right to look at. Every single view of every single screen is logged, and so mm-hmm. we know who's looking at what. And when questions arise, we can look at it. That doesn't minimize it because confidentiality is a huge problem in the credit card industry, this mm-hmm. industry, and it looks as if there's more exposure now because there's electronic records, and there may be. It has to be balanced against the benefit, and let me give you an example of that. Mm-hmm. My father had a condition that looked like Parkinson's disease, and his primary care physician treated him with a drug for Parkinson's disease that nearly killed him. He had mm-hmm. an adverse reaction to it that was nearly fatal, got hospitalized, got it treated. Doctor wrote, never give this drug to him again. My father was hospitalized at a nearby hospital. They didn't have that record from his physician. He was given that drug, and it killed him. Mm-hmm. So you have to balance that if that record were electronic, he would have been at risk for losing his mm-hmm. confidentiality. On the other hand, here's a fatal, an avoidable fatal accident that shouldn't have occurred, except the doctor's paper record was not available to that hospital system. And so there are balances. You have to balance the risk against the benefits. To me, the benefits outweigh the risks, and the risks can be controlled by increasingly, sometimes even onerous ways that providers, mm-hmm. researchers, administrators, the hoops we have to go through to get access to these data.
Well, and I guess to take the listener's question, though, seriously, in addition to saying weighing, the risk and benefit, what safeguards are in place just to make sure that this information doesn't fall into the wrong hands, Dr. Alan Snell?
Well, in our field, in the medical field, we have many regulations, and the most stringent is what's called HIPAA, and mm-hmm. it stands for Health Insurance Portability Act, and it was several years ago. And in fact, former Senator Ted Kennedy was very instrumental in pushing this forward. So as medical records were beginning to be adopted and maturing, it became very apparent that electronic transfer of information would make it easier to expose information against the patient's will, for example. So there are severe penalties now, and financial penalties and even up to imprisonment, when these episodes, these breaches, are in fact determined. Some of them are accidental. Some of them, as Dr. Tierney said, are illegal and not accidental. And so there have been prosecutions for that. So all of us, really, in the medical field, are aware of the HIPAA violations and the regulations that surround that. And our organizations take it very seriously. And even when there are accidental things like laptops being stolen, which just happened here in Indianapolis recently, involved 50,000 patients, the steps are taken to correct that, and they have to show that to federal officials. And then there's often penalties involved in that, too.
We are talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on. This is a great topic.
Thank you.
I think the you know, not only will the electronic records decrease cost, improve the integration of information, but it'll significantly contribute to the reduction of medical errors, which tend to could occur through illegible written documentation. And I think this filters down to all aspects of clinical care.
Good. Anyone want to respond to the comment? Thank you for the call, David.
There's an old joke in medicine that the only two required courses in medical school are how to write illegibly and how to make people wait.
Clearly they're excelling at delivering those.
As I said when we first began this conversation, I began in the realm when everything was handwritten, and it was often impossible to tell what was going on with the patient. You couldn't read a prescription, you couldn't read a note, et cetera. So that was really a problem that has essentially gone away with being able to have this display of information on a screen rather than trying to extract something from somebody's scribbled handwriting. So that's clearly been a quality issue. The other thing is that you always know when something was done. You know, a note often didn't have a time, didn't have a date on it. It's kind of hard. It was always difficult to put the sequence of events together in a patient's record.
So the electronic stuff gives you the time stamps.
It's all time and date stamped.
Well, and also the name is legible, particularly in a teaching hospital like our large hospital and at IU Medical Center too. Many house staff, residents, medical students, and the nurses often don't know who's writing the orders, who's writing the notes. They have questions about that when it's handwritten. And we spent an inordinate amount of time trying to decipher and interpret these notes and who they were coming from.
Yeah, well, as an example of the magnitude of this effect, when we went to all electronic prescribing on the outpatient side of our system, meaning that that all prescriptions were electronically generated, we reduced adverse drug events by 80%. And this has to do with issues of legibility, of confusion, of whether we're talking about 0.1 or 1.0. Some are more serious than others, but all have attendant risk and additional costs. We actually looked within our own data and saw that the average adverse drug event generated about $2,000 in costs, whether that was additional testing or whatever. But you scale that, and it doesn't take long to see that not only are we vastly improving the safety of the care we're delivering, but we're able to deliver higher quality care at a lower cost.
Another example at Wishart Hospital is that the time when they went from paper order writing to online order writing, the time from admission to giving the first drug dropped from 6 hours to 30 minutes. Simply because the information went, electrons are a lot faster than paper is.
And we've gotten, I want to slip in here real quickly if I could. We've gotten a tweet from a listener who's speaking to kind of the pace of change here and says, what about the learning curve for older doctors who aren't as technologically savvy? How do you help them transition? Dr. Alan Snell, I think I'll throw that one to you.
Well, I've been involved in pushing this medical record, electronic medical record initiative uphill for 20 years now, it seems. And in early days, that was a big issue. But many older physicians use email. They use computers. They have smartphones. They have technology. That's not as big an issue now as it used to be. So even physicians in their 50s and 60s use a lot of technology. Now, years ago when we were beginning electronic medical record, we had practices that I went into where the physician never owned a computer. So we had to sit down with them, teach them how to use a mouse, teach them what, we'd get them emailing their grandchildren, for example, and doing some simple things on a computer. And yes, it took a while for them, and their staff would be very helpful. But, you know, today that's not so much the case. The problem that we hear is it's not the technology that they are adverse to. It's some of the hurdles that we put in front of them.
Such as?
In the technology. Oh, things like mandatory stops and alerts. There's a phenomenon called alert fatigue. Mm-hmm. So when alerts pop up, then if you're not precise about those and you fire too many alerts in your system, then they tend to ignore them. Mm-hmm. So there are things like that, sign-on capabilities, remote access. It's things like that. It's not the fear of technology. They carry technology in their pocket, in their automobile, and they use it at home all the time.
Well, you know, physicians,
please, Dr. Lisa Harris.
Physicians want to do a good job for their patients. They want to deliver great care. And so I think that the things that, you know, when they get frustrated, it's because when they perceive that somehow there's a barrier. So I think that having records, and this is something that as our information system evolved, it was informed by, it was basically built by physician informaticians for physicians. So there was regular feedback from those who were using the system to those who were developing the system. And that system that started 40 years ago formed the basis for much of what's in play, across the country. But getting to Alan's point about the quality, I think then when we can use the analytics and we can show physicians that because of this enabling function, they're able to provide better medical care for their patients with this capability than without it, then I think that's what helps them embrace it. And so it's being able to show them the data that we can generate by having this utility.
Are there other pushbacks, though, in terms of the technology? I know as someone who has to sign off fairly routinely on rather large technology purchases for an academic discipline, one of the frustrations is, okay, I just spent $100,000 or whatever, and I know these machines are likely to be obsolete almost as soon as I get them out of the box with the rate of change. Is that a consideration, Dr. Tierney?
Well, it isn't.
For some of these small practices?
The hardware is actually fairly standard hardware these days. You don't have to buy special computers. Your laptop computer, your phone will accommodate most of these systems. What's necessary is the software early on was really clunky. Mm-hmm. And so we had to go through multiple screens to get where you wanted, et cetera. One of the problems is that Lisa had suggested was that the systems were written by people who didn't practice medicine, so they didn't give the providers what they needed. They didn't understand the workflow. That's changing fairly quickly now. So the newer systems, it takes a little training to get up and use them. I once practiced at the VA and was going to use their new system, which was terrific, and I said, I don't want to be trained. All right, just give me my user ID. If it's good software, I'll be able to figure it out. And indeed, I was able to use the system without getting any training. And if you think about it, how many of your listeners use a web browser, and how many got trained on how to use a web browser? And the answer is everybody uses it. Nobody got trained because it's obvious how to use it. Mm-hmm. These days, medical record systems are much more obvious in how to use them, much more easy to navigate. And I think that's lowered the plane of acceptance to practicing physicians.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Nate, who says, I am a cardiologist in central Indiana. I like EMR, meaning electronic medical records in general, but we'll play the devil's advocate. EMR is not always efficient and not always accurate. For inpatients, daily progress notes can be carried forward day after day without change, which saves time but creates a worthless and inaccurate daily note. I provide consultative care at a small community hospital in central Indiana. The hospital to receive federal funds recently converted to EMR. They are using a relatively affordable but clunky, non-intuitive system. Many of the providers are not tech-savvy. There's major provider dissatisfaction. Rounds are taking 3-4 times longer as providers struggle to chart and enter orders on the computer. It can be argued patient care is suffering and length of stay is up. And there have been some studies out there, frankly, that show that electronic medical records, rather than reducing the cost, add to it. Dr. Tierney, I'll throw this one back to you first. I imagine all of you would like to take a crack at it.
I started this off by saying healthcare is an information business, and when you change the information medium, you change the entire business. And unfortunately, most healthcare organizations don't understand that. So they think that it's going to be just like it was with paper records, only now we're going to do it electronically. And what the writer has suggested, that that's not the case, that you have to actually redesign the healthcare system with the information system to take best advantage of it, get rid of duplication of services, make the information easy to get in, easy to get out, et cetera. That takes some time. What you're seeing are the early startup aches and pains of any systematic change, and it's going to be painful early on. Having been involved in that in early part of my career back in the 1970s, it was painful. But once the system was designed, was redesigned and customized in a way that was useful to the physicians have accepted it, and it's become part of the way they practice medicine, and their medicine is now more efficient. But the beginning something is always difficult, and this was maybe, in my judgment, the forcing us to get into it a little bit too quickly, and as a result, people are buying clunky systems that are making their life more difficult than not. I think in the near term, because of the pushback that this cardiologist Nate is telling us, I think that these early adjustments are going to be made, and the systems will become more useful.
Dr. Alan Snell.
Well, I agree with Nate, our local cardiologist, and I mean there are two points here. One is the speed, and so that often translates into complaints about it lowers my productivity. Okay, well, we can't really duplicate the speed of a scribble on a prescription pad, and you heard that earlier. That's very difficult to do in an electronic system. It's the downstream negative impact that those scribbles have, both in prescriptions and orders and notes, that have created a lot of do-over work and errors, et cetera. So if you look at the big picture then in terms of speed and productivity, in many cases it's actually enhanced that, okay?
The other point he sort of addressed, though, is that the system can become kind of a machine that goes by itself, the daily reports, that it creates an inertia.
And that's exactly right. And we call that cloning, and that's being looked at now. It's a shortcut that a lot of the EMR vendors have baked into their systems that allow you to pull forward a note. And, you know, you could have 4, 5, 6 visits that look exactly identical. Well, you know that that's not accurate, and it's a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. And as Dr. Tierney pointed out, we're still evolving. So, we're out of the infancy stage. I say we're in the adolescent stage, but we're definitely not mature yet. And we need to find ways to improve workflow, make the assessment of that encounter with the patient more accurate, and not have to use these kind of shortcuts where you just copy and paste, because that's not meaningful information.
We are talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. William Tierney, who is president of Regan Streef Institute, Dr. Lisa Harris, who's the CEO and medical director of Wishart Health Services, and Dr. Alan Snell, head of medical informatics at St. Vincent Health. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about electronic medical records. Our guests are Dr. William Tierney, who is the president of the Regan Streef Institute, Dr. Lisa Harris, who is the CEO and medical director of Wishart Health Services, and Dr. Alan Snell, who is head of medical informatics at St. Vincent Health. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kate, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Kate. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Certainly.
I'm a registered nurse practicing in a hospital here in the city, and I had a question regarding, well, first of all, I think it's kind of interesting there's no nurses on your show today, since people, you know, go to the hospital for nursing care, too.
Okay, mea culpa, mea culpa. That one's my fault, Kate.
That's okay. My question actually has to do with nursing tasks that we have to perform that have actually added time, so it's similar to your last caller, and one example I had was medication administration, and I wonder if your guests have any information about any feedback they've gotten from the nurses, because with the electronic health record, now you have to scan the patient. They almost probably feel like an item at a grocery store, and then scan the drug and then click on, and for me personally, that interaction has become much less personal with the patient because you're constantly staring at the screen.
Great question, Kate. Thank you very much
sure.
for the call. And next time we will have a nurse on the program. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, and I'm going to broaden that a little bit. Has some of this taken the human element out of practicing medicine? I mean, when she said you feel like an item in a grocery store being scanned. Dr. Lisa Harris, I'll throw that one to you. I didn't see anyone leaping for it. So.
First of all, great question, Kate. And we certainly recognize the role or the contribution of the nurses to this this overall effort and to the team, especially in the inpatient setting. I mean, patients' experience with care is largely driven by the interaction that they have, you know, moment to moment, day in and day out during their hospital stay with the nursing staff. And I think we're all sensitive to the trade-offs that as, you know, some of these, we get the benefit in terms of improved patient safety. For example, the barcoding, that scanning does reduce the likelihood of giving the wrong medication to the wrong patients. There's no question about the value of that, and also no question about how that adds to the nurses' workload. I think that we need the input from our nursing staff, and I know that that's the case that across the board that we have nurses informing those processes. And, I guess flipping it a little bit to, the positive side, there's a lot of information that nurses gather. You know, when you first assess a patient coming into your unit, you spend a lot of time getting very critically important information that is important to the patient's care that isn't traditionally captured, through usual like laboratory data and the medication data and all the things that we the results of diagnostic tests and those sorts of things. You get information about patients' preferences for treatment, for their the cultural preferences, who needs to be notified. Lots of information that previously, I think, sometimes it gets scribbled on a piece of paper and stuck in a smock and was available to that nurse on that shift, but didn't necessarily have a way to get, into more broad availability. And so I think that having some of these vitally important nursing interactions and functions also captured through the information that you undoubtedly contribute when you're doing your assessments of patients, it enhances the care that all of us as a team are able to provide.
Yes, Dr. Bill Tierney.
Two small points. Number one is in the hospital I work in, mm-hmm. the implementation team for the informatics group is all nurses,
mm-hmm.
and the reason is because they best understand the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
So it would never minimize the role of nurses. We can't function without them, not just as clinicians, but as a key part of the informatics team. The second thing is that the healthcare environment can become look like it's you know, more and more high tech and less personal. A study that one of our investigators at Regenstrief did looked at Kaiser Permanente before and after they put computers into the exam room. And what they found out is that the physician and the patient spent more time looking at the computer and less time looking at each other. And the patients were less satisfied with the care afterwards than beforehand. That's the reason why in our practice there aren't computers in the exam room. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want the technology to get between them and the patients. It's out in the doctor's staff room where we do all our note writing and ordering and things like that, but not in the exam room. So part of this is a choice. The choice is how you want to use the technology and whether or not you put it between you and the patient or not. I'll agree with Lisa that the barcoding stuff absolutely reduces medication errors dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, okay, you feel like it's a UPC code, and I'm being in the checkout counter, and we do joke about that in the hospital. But on the other hand, you can hold the patient's hand while you're doing that. It doesn't get away with therapeutic touching. It becomes part of the care process. It doesn't detract from the care process.
Well, and I guess to speak to it, and I've been thinking about Kate's question. I want to thank her for the call because it was a provocative one. At some level, when people are in a hospital or in that situation, they are at their most vulnerable. You know, they're scared, they're frightened. And that's sort of the moment that you most want to be reminded of your humanity and not that you're just another cog in the machine. Dr. Alan Snell.
Well, and I agree with that. We never want to lose the human touch, the human approach. But there's nothing wrong with high touch, high tech combination. And in fact, what we're seeing now is a lot of our patients are more educated, and they're hearing and reading, and they're savvy, sophisticated. They don't want a nurse giving them medication without doing the five rights and the barcoding, because they've learned through different channels that is medication safety at its best, okay? We are seeing patients who don't want to be in a practice without an electronic medical record for the same reasons. And we're seeing medical students who don't want to go into a residency program where there are no electronic records. They don't want to be trained on anything else. And they don't want to choose a practice for their career unless it has that. So we're seeing that tide change now because people, both patients and providers, understand.
We are talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Walter, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Regarding the survivability of electronic records, there have been many articles and books written. Many government records from yesterdecade have been lost forever. Those in the cognoscenti of photography are telling us that no electronic photographs will survive. The only way to ensure survivability is to print on paper and archival paper. So that's one point of question here. The second is like unto it in that what is being done to protect these electronic records from EMP, that is to say electromagnetic pulse attack from nuclear weapons? Thank you. Over and out.
Thanks much, Walter. Thanks.
Well, those are provocative questions.
Go ahead.
I think
Dr. Bill Tierney.
First of all, let's talk about the second thing first. These records are backed up, and the backups are sent out of town, and backed up electronically out of town. And personally,
if it takes out the entire Western Hemisphere, then we have
a problem.
Then,
I think eventually this is all going to be cloud based anyway. I think we have to get more confident that the cloud is secure. But I think ultimately that'll be a much bigger solution. As far as whether or not media are going to be retrievable, I think it's actually healthcare that's going to drive the fact that new generations of media have to talk to each other because records can't die. At Wishart Hospital, there are records from 1973, when the system first came live, that are still available. The medium has changed. The computer systems, everything has changed since then. The same records are still available because every time a new system puts in, all the records have to get translated because all the data are important, because many of the patients are decades later are still alive and those data are still relevant. So I'm not as worried in healthcare. In fact, healthcare may drive the entire country in the continuity of technology because the records have to be continuous.
Yes, Dr. Allen Snow.
From a disaster standpoint, that it was pointed out, go back to Katrina 2005, where the majority of healthcare providers, hospitals, and practices were still paper in that region, and those were lost. And they were, many of them were lost forever. But the places that had implemented electronic records, either partially or totally, were able to get back online fairly quickly. And when those unfortunate victims of that disaster, many of whom landed in Houston at the Astrodome, as you recall, when records were needed in terms of immunizations, medications, things like that, very vital in these type of disasters, some were able to produce that. Many were not. So then they had to go through the anguish of being re-immunized, for example, because the paper record was lost. There was no backup system for the paper records.
We're talking about electronic medical records here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. We've gotten a question from a listener named Don who wanted to know if speech recognition software is in use in electronic medical records. Lisa Harris.
Actually, I was going to mention that great, great question, and it is something that is available to physicians who may not be as facile with a keyboard as others. It's an evolving technology, and it takes some time to train the program to your voice and your. But we do have physicians who are successfully piloting it. One of the areas where it could be especially helpful would be in the emergency department, where we're doing a lot of stuff on the fly. It's a very rapid-paced environment, so there would be great utility in having physicians be able to essentially dictate as they're doing their exam or moving from one area to another. A challenge there is ambient noise, and so there's lots of things we have to consider. But it clearly is part of the solution, and it's something that is with every iteration is getting better, and it's a part of how many physicians are able to adopt this workflow.
In our hospital, all radiology reports are dictated using voice recognition. So the entire department is being used.
It's here now.
And you have to train it to learn all our gobbledygook, and physicians have to talk a little slower and a little clearer, but it's here now
it's
and it's
be
useful.
Better than their handwriting, though, right?
No kidding.
Okay. Absolutely.
Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm enjoying the program.
Thank you very much. Your question, please.
Well, just as the son of an 89-year-old woman who is in those later years having more frequent hospital stays, I guess, than, say, when she was younger, I'm noticing that there's not a lot of integration of the medical record from her, say, in this case, her assisted living facility or the nursing home side, into the hospital. And I was wondering if that's a challenge, or is it cost prohibitive for long-term care facilities to adopt an EMR that would talk nicely with the EMRs at the hospitals, so that what I'm finding is medical records end up kind of taking on a life of their own after a while, and it's hard to keep them updated with the changes that are happening, day to day in her healthcare environment.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Chris.
Well, the question is, is there an effort to try and integrate electronic medical records with the older adult population who are staying in more and more in assisted or long-term care facilities, since there are a large population of the people who are ending up spending time in the hospital?
Thank you very much, and we will try to get you an answer right now. Thanks. Well, Dr. Tierney.
Yeah, the answer is yes. The Affordable Care Act actually had a part of it called the High Tech Act, which is paying physicians and hospitals to put electronic medical records into their practices, and it includes nursing facilities and other types of long-term care facilities. The notion being that once the data are electronic, they can be movable and they can follow the patient wherever the patient goes. So built into the act is the mandate that the records be interoperable, but it's a staged implementation. We've got to get them in there first using common coding formats, common messaging formats, like a, you know, a letter is a common messaging format, you know, where things are on it. Well, in a medical record, the things have to be in a place where another system will look at it and interpret it correctly. That's all happening at a very low level now, and once these systems are in place, the integration is something that doesn't happen spontaneously. It actually takes what's called health information exchanges that says, I'm going to send my data in a, to a place that's going to put it in a common format so we can go in and look at those data from multiple places. And it turns out that Indiana has the, one of the oldest and one of the largest and the most comprehensive information exchanges in the country called the Indiana Network for Patient Care. And it is indeed a place where from multiple hospital systems, including St. Vincent's and Wishart and Community and St. Francis and the major hospital system and IU Health, the major hospital systems in Indiana, they all contribute data to this, this common source so that when I get a patient's admitted to me, I'll give you an example. 49-year-old woman admitted to my service. She's got chest pain. I found out she was hospitalized last week and was catheterized in another hospital. I can get, reassure her, give her something for her pain, and discharge her from the emergency room rather than admitting her and repeating the test.
And I am afraid that's going to have to be the last word on what has been a fascinating conversation. We didn't get to, you know, the looks ahead and where this all is going to be going. I hope you all will come back next time with a nurse, obviously. Kate made a good point. I want to thank my guest, Dr. William Tierney, Dr. Lisa Harris, Dr. Alan Snell, for joining us for this fascinating conversation. I hope you all will come back. And I hope, I want to apologize to the listeners we weren't able to get on the air. Obviously, there was a lot of interest in this program. I hope you will all come back next week when we talk about the winners of the Indiana Authors Award. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Have a great week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.